This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Hey everybody, I'm HF Mason. I'm a General Surgeon and Chief Quality Officer at Baptist.
I'm Gemma Jones. I'm an improvement coach based in the UK and working with the team at Baptist.
Well, folks, we have a special guest today. We have Graham Alcott, and I know a lot of you already know him. You know about his books, but his newest book we thought just matched so well for our audience and what we're trying to do at Baptist Memorial Healthcare. And the book is called Kind, The Quiet Power of Kindness at Work. We are very excited to talk to you, Graham. But before we jump right into that conversation, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. So my background over the last 20 years or so was I worked in the charity sector in the UK. I used to run a small national charity. And then I went freelance, and in the process of going freelance, realized I was really bad at productivity, being organized, getting stuff done, and fell into doing lots of research and sort of work on myself of how to create better productivity systems. And through that, stumbled upon the ideas that became my business, Think Productive, and a big best-selling book called How to Be a Productivity Ninja. So that was back in 2009. And really since then, I've been taking that message around the world and talking to a lot of organizations, not just about how do individuals, you know, create high performance, how do you be more productive, but also what does that performance look like in terms of teams and culture? And really, that's where this latest book got me to, really, was my work with Think Productive over many years. We've got a really big team at Think Productive who are based all around the world. And many of those people had never met each other face to face. And so what is really important to us is culture and how we work together. And for many years, one of our values had been trust and kindness are our rocket fuel. And then when I was thinking about what the next book looks like, I just came across the idea of, well, why don't I tell that story and talk about why kindness plays this role in helping develop high performing teams and helping organizations have cultures that really work. So, yeah, that's the last 20 years in a couple of minutes.
Well, Graham, thank you very much for being here. And, you know, a disclaimer, you know, Brad and I are from the South, the deep South of the United States. Skip is a transplant. And we grew up, and our moms and our parents taught us always to be nice, to everyone. And I think a lot of people, including me, we equate being nice with being kind. And a lot of times that's not the case. Could you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, well, let me start by saying I have a couple of friends from the South and, you know, very strongly devout Christian people, very strong sense of ethics in the way that they work. So, yeah, I get that mindset. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with what your mums were telling you in the South there, that we should be nice. But I do think there is a distinct difference between the word nice and the word kind. And I think it's a really important distinction. The way I describe it is that the main difference is about truth, and nice is often about telling people what they want to hear, and kind is about telling people what they need to hear. And there's a big difference there. My definition of kindness is truth and grace, right? So being committed to the truth of a situation, whether that's someone being in need or whether that's someone who you work with or someone that you know, and you have some information, you have something that you need to tell them that's a piece of truth. You know, you can choose to not do that. And like a good example is if you're working with somebody and let's say they're doing a presentation and presentation doesn't go very well, right? And on the way out of the room, they say, hey, how did I do? How was the presentation? And you know it didn't go well. Well, the nice thing to do in that moment is you just go, yeah, fine, cool. You know, and you just try and kind of shirk the moment. Whereas the kind thing to do in that situation is actually to say, well, that person's probably really nervous and they're adrenaline dumping right now. So I do want to have a conversation with them, but it's going to be tomorrow. And then tomorrow you spend some time, you know, really being brave with giving them that truth, but doing it in a way that will allow them to grow and develop. And the next time they're sat in a room and they're giving a presentation, they're going to do a better job because of the work that you put in. So that's, for me, the difference between nice and kind. It's, you know, kindness is committed to truth. Kindness is anything but soft and weak and all those words that we often associate with nice. But actually, you know, kindness in that situation, it's brave, it's skillful, it's a bit inconvenient. And I think for all those reasons, we need to see kindness as badass.
Like that. Thank you.
Jim, I want to get you involved because I know you've been reading Graham for years.
So I'm really, you taught me a new word in this book, Graham, which I'm really interested in and which I haven't heard before. And that's the concept of kindfulness.
Yes.
And I just think it's a really beautiful kind of way to talk about kindness, but it sort of feels like a bigger way. It feels like a bit of practice in that being kind is something we can practice and we can actively decide to do rather than us just, you know, I'm not, someone could just be a kind person and that's intrinsically them, but I feel like you're suggesting that we can go practice this.
Yeah, I see kindness as a practice, and, you know, just like writing is a practice, yoga is a practice, running is a practice. And that means that we can get better at it. We can improve at it. Many people, I'm sure, listen to this will know that empathy is a neuroplastic trait. So we can develop more empathy the more that we're kind. And this word kindfulness is something that I basically made it up for the book. So it was the idea was to combine mindfulness and kind.
Yeah.
And really to start talking about the idea that when we have a mindset, you know, as leaders and in cultures where we're designing those situations to make it easy for other people to be kind, then really amazing things happen. So a really good example of this is in the coffee shops of Naples. And I talk about this at the end of the book. In the coffee shops of Naples, they have this jar on the desk in the coffee shop, and it's called Cafe Sospeso. And it's a really simple pay it forward kind of model. So you're stood in the queue, you see the jar. When you get to the front of the queue, you buy your coffee, but then you also give the barista money for another coffee. They give you a ticket. You put the ticket in the jar. And then when someone else comes in, you know, a couple of days later or late that afternoon, they can take that ticket out. They don't have any money, but they can buy their coffee and claim that suspended coffee without having to pay any money. So when you think about what's happening in that moment, so I'm in the queue, I'm in a stressful, you know, busy sort of part of my day. But I get this one little moment where I just see that jar on the desk and I suddenly have this sense of space where it's, well, actually, I can do something kind. That moment has made it so easy for me to jump in and be kind. I just need to give the barista a bit more money and then I've done my bit. Cool. The barista is probably having a really bad day because there's lots of grumpy people coming in wanting their coffee. And what the barista gets to observe is the act of someone being kind. So they start to wire their own experience away from it being about scarcity and towards abundant. We live in an abundant world. Someone cares. Someone's helping. That's really good. The same happens to all the other people in the queue. So there's this science I talk about in the book where kindness is actually a win-win-win-win situation. So the person who is kind, they receive a psychological benefit to that. The person who receives the kindness does, but so do all the witnesses. And then that act of kindness actually creates a ripple effect where other acts of kindness happen as a result of all that witnessing too. So you've got this win-win-win-win thing going on. But the thing about kindfulness is, what did the coffee shop owner do in that moment? And really all they did was, like, 8 years ago, they found a jar and they wrote Cafe Sospeso on it and they just left it on the counter. They didn't do anything else. But what they did was really profound, is they realized that if they created that vessel, they would make it easy for everybody else to be kind. And so that's really what I'm talking about when I talk about kindfulness. Of course, we want to go through the day and we want to be kinder ourselves. We want to notice those moments for kindness. We want to jump into those moments enthusiastically and be kind. But where it gets really more powerful is when we're able to engineer those vessels for kindness. And that is something that you can do, you know, whatever your job role and in whatever way. It's just to think about those simple things that you can do that make it easy for other people to be kind. A really obvious example is when someone arranges a thank you card because someone's done a good job or someone's leaving. And then they pass it around the office or pass it around the neighborhood or whatever. And in that moment, everybody writes in the card something way more gushing than they would ever say to that person's face, because you just made it easy. And so all that person did was they just created the vessel. And so that's something that I'm really interested in when I go and talk in the corporate world, is how can you as leaders create those vessels for kindness? And how can you as a leader create the culture that makes it easy for everybody else to be kind?
And that's such a great demonstration of, it's, that wasn't a big complicated thing. That was a jar with a label. and, you know, the thought process behind where they placed the jar. It doesn't have to be a big complicated thing. It's wonderful.
For sure. You know, and it's costs next to nothing. I mean, often people say kindness is free. And my response to that is, well, not quite. It's readily available and it breeds more, but there is often a small cost to it. But actually with kindfulness, it's often the small investment from you prompts bigger investments from everybody else too. So that ripple effect is, yeah, super powerful.
The return is huge.
Hey, Graham, in our culture today, is the cost of being kind increasing?
Is the cost of being kind increasing? I don't think so. I think in many ways, I mean, there's a lot of technology out there that connects us, and there's a lot of talk about how that technology has negative impact on us, you know, thinking about social media and all the debates around that. But I think that connectivity also makes the opportunities for kindness more readily available to people. And I see that quite a lot, you know, both online and in person is, yes, there are lots of spaces that get unkind, but there are a lot of spaces that people are connecting around and people are being kind as well. So I think the cost, I don't think for me the cost is increasing. I think it's more about how we, you know, how we adapt and frame the sort of changes that are going on in society.
Graham, I want you to put on your productivity hat for a minute. And, you know, we all want to be more productive. We want the people that we work with to be more productive, the people that we lead to be productive. I never have really thought of kindness being linked to productivity and actually increasing productivity. But you argue that it does and can. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so everybody's first reaction when, like, especially people who knew me from Productivity Ninja and Think Productive, everyone's first reaction when I said I was writing a book about kindness, they would say things like, well, that's the opposite of Productivity Ninja. And, you know, Productivity Ninja's so much about the individual productivity. And then this feels like, you know, it's this kind of collective thing, or it's a hippie thing, or people would have all kinds of reactions to it. But actually, there's a much closer link and a bridge between productivity and kindness than you would think. And I suppose the main way to talk about that is to say that often when I'm going into organizations and doing workshops and talks and consulting, you know, it starts with a conversation about what do individuals need in order to be productive and to perform better. But where that goes is, okay, so how do we make the team dynamic more conducive to better innovation or better collaboration or better interrogation of ideas and so on? And what you find is at the root of that is psychological safety. So when people feel able to raise the alarm, to share the strange idea, to give the difficult feedback, then you get organizations that are more focused on better results. And there's loads of science that backs this up. There's also a really good study Google did where they, at the sort of height of the sort of high growth of Google, they did this study called Project Aristotle, and it was basically trying to answer the question, look, we're going to create all these new teams in Google. What are the fundamental components that we need for a high-performing team at Google? And what they found in this study was the answer to that question is not who is in the room in terms of talent. It was not how many people you put on the team. It was not where the team is based and location and technology and everything else. The fundamental component of a high-performing team at Google was, does it have good psychological safety? Do people feel able to take those interpersonal risks? So what you find is, you know, when I'm initially and originally talking to people about individual productivity, when it gets onto culture, that's the thing that people really need. It's that sense of clarity and that sense of, you know, being able to have a really clear definition of, you know, where we are, where we're going, what does that look like? How is everyone contributing to that? You know, how do we measure the success of this? How do we know when we're done? And all of that really comes from psychological safety. And what you find is when you think about how do psychologically safe organizations get created, it's all about the connection. It's all about the trust and the kindness and empathy. So there's this huge, you know, body of research out there that basically links those things together, which is what I talk about in the first half of the book. I thought about the book in terms of the first half. I really wanted to write it for the cynics, because I thought what would happen is people who already felt like their organizations were kind would buy it for the managers who they thought didn't quite get it. And so I kind of had that manager in my head as my ideal reader for the first half of the book. It's like, I'm not actually writing it for the people who've bought it. I'm writing it for the people who've had it bought for them. And I'm trying to convince those cynics of about the, you know, the sort of evidence base for kindness improving productivity, improving performance. And yeah, the good news is there's plenty of evidence out there, which is all in the first half of the book.
Yeah, Graham, I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet, but I can't wait. It's really this is really a great conversation and dialogue. I want to stay on that and kind of this productivity thread. But I think in healthcare today, and certainly for our organization at Baptist Memorial Healthcare, I think that there's a lot of leaders that would say they are overwhelmed. They have too many things to do. They don't have enough time to do it. And so this hamster on a wheel kind of running as at full speed, what would you say to a leader that is in a really high demand, lots of to-dos? How do they slow down enough to really insightfully think about a different way of approaching this concept, specifically being kind?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. So before I get into answering that question, it's probably worth saying that the biggest source of accidental unkindness is busyness. So busyness,
great point.
You know, not only is a really addictive thing, and you know, cortisol and stress hormones are very addictive on the body, but we get caught on this hamster wheel and we just keep going and going. So yeah, the first thing to say is just watch out for the unkindness that you're doing to yourself, but also the unkindness that you might be doing to other people by staying in that state of busyness. And you know, even that whole thing about thinking of busyness as some kind of badge of honor, you know, like, how are you doing at the moment, how are you doing? I'm busy, you know, and it's almost like this this badge of honor. And we really need to get away from that, I think, as a society. So a few things to say around how to do that. The first is to say that I've worked with all kinds of different industries, everyone from, you know, healthcare providers to universities to big tech companies to, you know, automotive lease hire, all these different kind of industries. And the cycles might be slightly different, but there's always a version of things are going to get easier in the summer, or things are going to be okay after year end, or things are going to be okay after this point. And it's almost like this fictional idea that, you know, if we feel really overwhelmed right now, as long as we can pin our hopes on what happens in the mythical 2 weeks time, then we don't need to take any action. And so I think the main message for people here is just realize that there is no light at the end of the tunnel. And actually what you think is the light at the end of the tunnel is usually cranky manager with a torch bringing you more work. Right. But I think with that in mind, the time to make change is not in 2 weeks' time, it's now. And so I just really encourage you, first of all, to just reframe it like that. You've got to think about it as, this is not a temporary state that I'm in. You know, if you're on that hamster wheel, you've got to take ownership of that and say, right, I'm going to do something with that right now. My friend Carl Honoré, who wrote the book In Praise of Slow, one of the biggest viewed TED Talks of all time, his talk on the slow movement, he has this lovely phrase when he talks about what does it mean to slow down. And he says, don't think about slow purely in terms of speed. Think about it in terms of savoring. So as you go through your workday, you can either choose to be fully present with the people around you and be fully present with everything that you're doing and be fully present with every chew of your lunch as you eat your lunch, or you can rush through those things and hardly notice them. And really that's about, you know, your ability to put your attention on the right stuff and to be present in that way. And I think that's a really good way of thinking about it, because a lot of people will, you know, hear your question there, Brad, and just say, well, I don't have time to slow down. I've got a million things to do. And it's often not really about needing to slow down. It's more about taking those two or three really big, deep breaths before you jump on a call, or just spending 2 minutes when you get to your location, just sitting under the tree before you go into the building. It's just these really tiny things that often don't take as much time, but in a world where we're on the hamster wheel and stressed, can just have a really profound effect on where your mind's at and then how you approach that next conversation and you know, the way you speak to people and the way and what it feels like ultimately to be on the other end of you, which I think is the really important part.
Yeah, that's great.
I just wanted to add to that in terms of, I think it is easy to think about you know, having time to do something or energy to do something. But in your book, Graham, you talk about 8 principles of kindfulness, and one of them is slow down, but there's 7 others.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that really stands out to me is number 4, which is people first, work second always. And I think if we just kept that in our minds, maybe that might help us. You know, that's not necessarily about slowing down, but it is about sort of where we're focused or how we're looking at a situation or thinking about a situation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure there'll be people as part of this audience listening to this whose job is doing surgery or doing very critical operations. And, you know, in that moment, I want them to be putting the work first, right?
Yeah.
So there will always be moments for that. But I think there's an awful lot of the work that we do that we are in danger of taking too seriously. Right. So the way that we're consuming information, the way we're showing up to meetings, like we often have this really stressful, anxious sense that everybody else is thinking and analyzing every single one of our actions and is so focused on judging us at every opportunity. And, you know, the reality is that most people are so busy in their own heads doing their own thing, they don't really notice half the stuff that you do. And so there's so much that we take way too seriously. And I think it's really important to just acknowledge that. But the people first, work second, always mantra is a thing that for me started probably about 12 years ago. We had this little phase within my business where we had a relatively young team and they were all fit and healthy. And yet suddenly we had every single one of them have these major life events, you know, that just put them out of action. You know, they suddenly needed to be with their families for a week or a few days, or they're in hospital. And it just really started to, it created this sense where myself and Elena, our managing director, started to have this conversation where we were like, we just feel like we're cursed. Like our business is just cursed. Like everyone's having all these major life events. And then you realize, oh no, it's not that we're cursed. That is just baked into the tapestry of life, right? Life is suffering. There will always be these things. And so when we were having all of this stuff happen, we just came up with this phrase, people first, work second, always. And I try to mention that whenever I get some kind of text or phone call or I'm in a face-to-face conversation that looks something like, hey, I need to drop everything. I need to be away for a day or so or a few days or whatever. I always try and bring that phrase into the conversation really explicitly. So it's people first, work second, always. The most important word in the phrase is the word always. Because it tells us two things. One is there's no exceptions to that. So even on the really busy days, the idea is someone else has got your back. So drop everything. Someone else will pick up the slack. And then the deal is you do the same when, you know, you're lucky enough to be okay, but someone else needs that bit of extra help. So it always means there's no exceptions. And always just reminds us that it's always somebody's always. So if you're looking around your team and you realize everybody's fit and healthy and everyone's at work and no one's got any problems, then your first question is, well, who is it today? And your job as a leader is to be scanning the horizons and looking for the signs and seeing who might need a little bit of support in the moments, perhaps before they're going to raise the alarm and before it gets too much. So, yeah, just that reminder that it's always somebody's always is a really important piece of our responsibility as leaders, I think.
Graham, your eighth principle says it doesn't end with you.
Yeah.
I know it starts with the individual. And I think, you know, with your example at the coffee shop, it is somewhat contagious. But, you know, what are some intentional things that a leader can do other than just being a model? What are some things that they can do to sort of cascade this throughout the organization and the people that they lead?
Yeah, so I mean, I think kindness is a very very individual and personal kind of thing. So I can only really speak to things that I do. Yeah, you're right. The eight principles are kind of bookended, if you like. The first one is kindness starts with you. And I think that's really important when we're talking about the eighth principle. It doesn't end with you. They're linked. So kindness starts with you. It's about saying it's really difficult for you to be kind on a regular basis if you're not being kind to yourself. And when we think about kindness, we always start with who else in the world can I help? Whose parking meter can I pay it forward? All those kind of internet memes that we have around kindness. But actually, the biggest thing is, are we rewiring our own brain to be away from scarcity and towards abundance? So if we're being kind to ourselves, if we're leaving somewhat on time from work, if we're giving ourselves that grace, if we're making sure we get the right levels of rest, if we're really giving ourselves a sense of abundance, then we'll carry that abundance when we then are in a situation where we notice that someone might have some of those warning signs, or someone might need our help with something. Or if someone says to you, hey, have you got 5 minutes? If all you're doing all day is telling yourself, I don't have enough time, everything's scarce, you're going to say, no, I don't have 5 minutes. But if you're giving yourself that grace, giving yourself that time, then when it gets to how am I going to be in interactions with other people, you're going to set that up much more for kindness. So there's a really important role modeling thing, which is about role modeling, you know, our own mindsets, but also about showing everybody else it's okay to leave on time. It's okay to have 5 minutes for someone else. It's okay to, you know, to kind of make those points or make those accommodations or whatever it looks like. In terms of things that we do at Think Productive that I think are really conducive to our own kindfulness and our own culture, one of our big ones, I'm very influenced by a book called Time to Think by Nancy Klein. So she's a UK-based facilitator, and at the heart of everything she does is about saying, you know, the quality of your work is influenced by the quality of your thinking, and the quality of your thinking is influenced by the quality of the listening of the people around you. So when people are fully paying attention, then that's when you start to get this sense that what you do really matters. So we make sure that pretty much every meeting we do at Think Productive starts with a check-in. It starts with, you know, and if we're doing them back to back, we kind of change it up a little bit. But the general idea is we start every meeting with just like with two things. One is, how are you feeling right now? And the other one is just one thing that's going well. And why I think that's really important is then 10 minutes into the meeting, when someone's got something to say that feels a bit contentious or feels a bit daring or feels a bit unusual that they're about to say, they're already warmed up. They've already spoken. They've already made a contribution, even if that contribution is just what's my name and how am I feeling and what's one good thing that's going well. But also it starts every meeting with a positive reality. If everyone shares one positive reality, then again, your mind is then tuned into other positive realities. So I think that's a really important one. We have a nice little thing at Think Productive where almost randomly we will just send each other little vouchers and things like that. So the last one I sent was a massage voucher. I had a really amazing one where I was a bit under the weather and someone sent me a Just Eat voucher so I could just order the next couple of meals from Wagamama at home. Wagamama's my favorite. And so just this little thing of because we're all working remotely and we don't really work physically in the same building, the idea that something physically arrives, you know, through the post and there it is in your house is just this really lovely way of sort of physically sort of noticing a connection to these people who are far away, but they've just done something that is super kind. So I think those are really important things. We have, whenever we do away days, we bring a big pot of like plastic zoo animal giraffes to the meeting. And basically that is to reward anyone in the meeting in a particular moment where they have stuck their neck out, right? And so the lovely thing about that is it creates this physical representation that it is okay to stick your neck out. It is okay to speak the truth. It is okay to bring to the conversation the stuff that really needs to be said. And we actively encourage that to happen. So those are just like really simple things you can do. They don't take a lot of time, but what they do is they just reinforce this culture of let's, you know, have open dialogue. Let's be really honest about the stuff that really matters. And also let's be regularly encouraging each other to scan the horizons around, you know, how is someone feeling? Like, is someone really struggling? Like, so it just kind of opens up more of that vulnerability in the way that we communicate with each other. Then it allows us to have more insight into what people really need.
Hey, Graham, this has been such a great conversation. We dove right in. And I think our listeners will really enjoy this episode. So thank you for joining us. But I've got a question for you in that, which is, you know, you started this podcast talking about how you started in kind of productivity management and productivity ninja, and over a 10-year span, you arrived at your book Kind. I'm really curious, as Kind has launched, where do you see things moving for you as you think about work and application and the next missing piece, where is it that you tend to be focusing and thinking about today?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So I was very lucky with Kind in that at the end of last year, it won two really big awards here in the UK. So it won a Business Book Award, and then it won the Institute of Leadership Leadership Book of the Year. And I have to say, those awards have been super useful in terms of just getting more eyeballs on the book, and just more people are just sort of thirsty to hear more about it and curious. And I'm definitely getting more inquiries in terms of organizations wanting to bring me in and to have conversations face to face around it. So I'm one of those people. So I've written six books, and often people have this, you know, often people's question is, okay, so what's the next book? And what's very easy for me is retreating back into my shed and, you know, getting the post-it notes out and planning a next book. And, you know, that's my comfort zone, really, is, you know, just coming up with the concepts. And I love being halfway through a first draft and the sort of the romantic moment of that. But actually, that's not what's needed in the world. And so that for me would be a retreat. And so what I've been saying to people is, there's no next book. I'm not doing another one. I'm not doing book seven. But what I'm really trying to do over the next couple of years is really get the message of this book out to as many people as possible. I have this leadership program that I run called Kindful Leadership as well. But really, it's about not wanting to retreat to the shed and work on book seven, but really do the thing that for me is outside my comfort zone, actually, which is, you know, as an introvert, it's being out there in the world and doing the marketing around it and sort of pushing myself out there and then being in rooms with people looking at it. So, yeah, that's really the plan for the next couple of years.
Well, Graham, this has been fantastic. Really, really good. I'm going to do something I rarely do. I'm going to ask you to come back on in the very near future. I'd like to do a podcast on Productivity Ninja in light of your thinking and writing on Kind. But this has been really great, Graham. Folks, you need to go out and get the book Kind right now, The Quiet Power of Kindness at Work. And so, Graham, we're so grateful for you thinking and you wrestling and you struggling with this subject and reflecting on it for us and helping kind of shed some light on it. But on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much for all the great work you're doing. We're so grateful for everything that you're doing, Graham.
Thank you. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, I'd love to come back and do another one sometime. So thank you very much.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, I want to bring your attention to one thing. It's a weekly email that Graham sends out. It's called Rev Up for the Week. If you'll go to his website, www.grahamalcott.com, grahamalcott.com, and go to the very bottom, and you'll see something that says Rev Up for the Week. It's a free weekly email that he sends out, which really just has a real positive or productive thought for the week. Really want to encourage you to go to grahamalcott.com, go to the bottom and look for Rev Up for the Week and sign up for the free weekly email where he sends out that positive or productive thought for the week. I think you're really going to enjoy it.